So some of you guys are going to be asking, what am I doing Sunday? What's going on Sunday? Well, I'm going to tell you here right now what's going down. So this Sunday is So Many Ways Model Car Club's first annual model car show. Where? At Elysian Park. Sunday, September 22nd, 2019. All model cars are welcomed. The setup is from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. and the show starts at 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So make sure, get those cars cleaned up. Not the night before, but days before, all right? The location is at Elysian Park in L.A. And hope to see you there. Bring your canopy, your table, your models, refreshments, barbecue pit, everything. Just bring everything with you. All right, guys. See you Sunday. All right. Before we get started, I just want to make a little quick announcement. We do have a Scale Riders YouTube page. Please subscribe and check out the content there. It's in addition to what you hear here on the podcast. And some of the guests that I've had here on the show are also featured on there as well. So check us out, youtube.com/Scale Riders. And episode 91 is this right here underway, which you're about to hear with my homie Iceman Collections all the way in Arizona, Joel. Let's go ahead and hit him up.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Joel? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Edgar? I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Just hanging out right here, chilling. I was working on my model car earlier before I called you, and then I was like, you know what? I need to take a break. Let's do the podcast. I'll continue that later. What were you doing?
Oh, yeah. I'm setting up some kits here. I'm pulling from the stash. I'm running out of space again, so I got to get rid of a few, put them up on eBay and see.
Yeah.
The guys on IG, see what they want. What are you working on, or is it one of those that you want to reveal to the show, or what?
No, not yet. This is working on the 62 Bel Air for the dedicated magazine build-off. And it's funny, man, because On one of the episodes, I was talking to David and I was telling him about my plan about like doing 1 month of just working on the car, like body work. And then month number two, paint, you know, on the body and body and the interior. And then after that, just starting to finish it up, you know, for the third month. But it's funny because when I started the thing, I started to cut up the car and just wanting to swap roofs and parts and whatnot from it, right? And then I started running into problems. I started running into like I had hit you up about the engine not fitting now because the body was too small. And then I was having just like other issues in the back of the trunk because I had changed like the roof line and everything. So I just said to myself, you know what? I learned something here. Let me reattempt it. I have another 62 Bel Air. And I know what I want to do with the roof. So I kind of redid the whole process, but I went about it a different way. And now I'm happy where it's at now. And and as far as like the engine, I did manage to pull one out. Well, so the belly and the chassis, the bottom, I'm going to end up using not from the originally from the 62 Bel Air. I'm going to be using it from the Catalina, the 62 AMT.
The Pontiac, okay.
And it fits in there. And there's some little minor modifications you're going to have to do, but it fits in there. And the Catalina engine, I'm going to be able to use some parts from that and then also some parts from the 67 Impala. I don't know. Have you ever gotten that yellow 67 Impala AMT that has a yellow Super Sport on the cover?
Yeah, the Street Machine.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, the Street Machine. So the engine, some of the pieces on that are different from the other one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be going for those pieces, the ones that are on that Street Machine on there.
If you're looking for other custom parts, AMT makes a 62 Buick Electra. and it's one of those 3-in-1 kits, and it has a lot of customizing parts. So
yeah,
it might give you some pieces to be able to slam that 62 Chevy that you're working on without having to make too many modifications. So, and I have one of those if you need to reach out and
Let me know. Cause I know I bought one of the Electras, but I don't know if I have that 3-in-1 though. Cause I think the one I have is just kind of just like one way.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I don't remember like seeing any lower in my stash.
It's a 2-in-1 now that I'm looking at it, but it's stock or stylized custom, and it shows those drastic customs with those very big fender skirts, and it has like a scoop on the trunk, and I mean it's a little over the top, but yeah. It's just when you look at the suspension, you might have something that works.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let me look through my stuff first, and then I'll let you know for sure. Now, thanks for that though, for letting me know, dude. From the last time that we did the podcast, that might have been maybe last year when we did it when you were a guest, or earlier this year. I can't remember, dude. But it's been a long time, and
it has been a long
time. Dude, I had gotten like a few different people ask me the same questions that they this is what they asked me. They said, why didn't you ask Joel how did he come up with the name Iceman Collections?
Like,
That was a question that I got asked 3 times from different people. So I was like, all right, and I made sure to write that down for this one. So
it's funny that you asked me that, because when I moved to Arizona here a couple of years ago, my license plate on my car actually says Iceman J on it.
Oh, dang.
And one of my trips back to El Paso, late last year, I got pulled over by the cops, and then he comes over and he's all like, "Ah, damn, man, I was hoping it was Chuck Liddell, the UFC fighter."
Oh yeah.
And I was like, no. and he a lot of people ask me about it, and everybody's all, either you really like Chuck Liddell or you really like Top Gun movie, and it's never either of those. Nobody can ever guess it, because it's really not even that exciting of a story. What it is that growing up I was a big gamer, and that was just a tag name that I started to use. And it's funny, you know, Iceman Collections, just the name Iceman has carried through so many different hobbies that I've done. Back in the day in high school, when it first became popular in the 90s, right, to download music, I would record, I would download music, and I would make CDs. And then the little logo that I had said Iceman Productions on it. And then I would give them to my friends or whatever. And so the name, just the name Iceman, has kind of carried through a lot of the hobbies that I've done, and gaming and all that. So when I ended up doing, when I started back with model building, and I opened an eBay store, then it was just kind of, you know, this is just a big collection that I have. And then I just put it together in Iceman Collections. It's just kind of been something that it's just grown on me. So now everything, like there's so many silly things that I have, keychains and, you know, little plaques, little trophies that I just kind of get done, and they just say Iceman Collections on it. So it's not even, I'm telling you, it's not an exciting background story to it. That's just what it's been from my video game days.
That's pretty cool though. I like that you've kept it, you know, and I feel like that name, especially in the model world, you've cemented it. Everybody knows that name, you know, attached to you, because I feel like you've helped a lot of people find stuff, and at the same time you've grown a lot of friendships and relationships with people throughout the years with the model community.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. I mean, I'm humbled to see people just post, you know, their progress shots, and then there's one of my stickers on there. I can tell you that there's a lot more people that just know me by Iceman, or that'll call me Iceman, that don't even know what my real name is.
Yeah.
And part of that is probably just because we've never met in person. You know, I haven't had the chance to do that. So, but it's just humbling to see, you know, my sticker out there, or, you know, people on Facebook, some of the groups, people will be like, "Oh, I'm looking for this." And they'll be like, "Oh, check with Iceman. He has a huge collection," things like that. So it's really cool, you know, and I think we talked about it last time, and I hear a lot of folks talk about it on your podcast, that just the, you know, the modeling community, I have so many internet friends. I haven't met, I can't I can even count on one hand how many people I've met from Instagram or from Facebook that also do model cars, because when I was in El Paso, I just didn't get a chance to go to shows. There was nothing there. And now here in Phoenix, you know, I've been here for a couple of years and I know there's shows, but I'm either too late to them or I always have plans. And so my goal this year was to get out to a show or two. And I, so that kind of reminds me that the last time that you and I talked for the podcast was last year, because mm-hmm. I wanted to get out to shows this year. And I've had to push that out to 2020 because there's been just a couple of family things where I've had to make a priority taking trips back to El Paso. But, you know, next year, I'm hoping that I really start to get to shows down there where you're at, you know, to the West Coast. But before the year ends here, I want to make it to a show here. I've been talking to Rob Ejerando, and I've been talking to Alex and our bootlegger, and they're here and they're always telling me, you should go, dude, you should go. So, you know, goals, I guess, but I'm going to get there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I know earlier this year at the NNL, I was surprised I got to see your cars in person at the show. And I saw them at the table when I was cruising around, like taking photos and looking at the cars. And I was like, oh, damn, your cars are right here. And then I seen Juan Sepulveda was there. And then I kind of put two and two together, you know, that he had brought them out like there. So I was kind of like, oh, that's tight. It was just a cool thing to see, like, a lot of the vehicles that you see on Instagram that are being built to see him, and now in person.
To see him in person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did me the solid. I asked him. And I was like, don't feel pressured. I was like, you know, I'm just, it'd be cool to have, you know, the one of my cars or two of my cars out there. And I had that Monte that Dedicated put in their magazine, their first mm-hmm. Issue. And then I had that 64 Chevelle wagon that Juan had painted for me. And so I figured, you know, let's show it off as a in progress build. So he did those two. And I know he's going to a couple of more shows the rest of this year. And I kind of asked him, but he said, yeah, of course. He's always down to, you know, to helping me out. He's always been a big supporter. But then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait because, like, I want to kind of put a lot of these cars that I've been showing off on Instagram. Like, I want people to finally be like, oh, shit, they're here. And then for me to also be there so that, you know, I can stand behind the cars or whatever. Not literally be like, yeah, that's mine. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
people
be like, oh, shit, you know, that's Iceman's car. And so strike up a conversation and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. No, and it will happen. I bet, like, when the time does come when you're out here, your cars will be displayed. And for, like, a moment when you step away to go, you know, go somewhere real quick, people are going to be like, where's he at? Is he here? You know, because they're going to see all your cars and then, oh, here he comes. And those are just going to be some opportunities right there to speak and meet with people right there. We're hoping that this year coming up in 2020, the NNL, there'll be a big presence and a lot of people coming out, participating, making the trip. I know George has already told me that he's already booked to come out. For that time, and hopefully he brings like Pete with them too. I'm not sure, but I know he mentioned him, and then Matthew Dennis is also planning on coming out as well for that show in January. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know which show I want to make it out to. Like, there's, you guys have so many meets, and so, you know, the NNL is obviously one of the bigger ones, but I'm just going to, you know, I'm just looking forward to getting out to any of the shows out there to meet some of you guys in person finally.
Yeah. Even the upcoming meet that's going to be going down with the So Many Ways, that's like their first annual meet. And that area where they're having it at that park, that's like a well-known area in LA where pretty much a lot of the heart of a lot of like car lowrider cars,
the culture
is out there, and there's just a lot of history in that park. So I'm looking forward to that. It's been kind of hard for me to attend shows and even just gatherings, and this is I'm very excited because this is one in a long time where I don't have any like responsibility, like obligations to be somewhere. So this is kind of like, you know, I have the free time, hang out with my friends and be out there. and just chop it up. And I'm really excited about taking photos. And one of my plans is to also try to see who's available in that moment there to do like some quick video interviews.
Oh, that's so cool, man.
So I'm gonna improvise. I'm just gonna see how it is, because yeah, it's kind of, it can be a little nerve wracking, you know, just like putting someone on the spot, like, hey, let's do this real quick, especially on video.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, wait, what? So
yeah, I'm sure a lot of the guys are like, oh, there's Edgar, maybe he's gonna ask me a question. I mean, you know, some guys are eager to get on your podcast even if it's for a little while. So I think it's gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully some of the guys bring out some stuff to sell, too. That'd be kind of nice to see, you know? When it's that excitement, you know, you're kicking it with everybody. You're seeing cars that are already built. And then they're going to have cars that are hopping. You know, if someone has, like, some models, like, oh, I'm selling these. I'm trying to get rid of these. I'm sure it's going to bring more excitement.
Every time there's shows, and, you know, everybody's posting on Instagram videos, like, every weekend that happens, I kind of have to find, you know, like, an hour or so just to kind of sit down and go through all the posts. And, you know, like, I can wait for the magazines that have all the, you know, the summary or whatever, but I like seeing everybody's videos and just, you know, what are they seeing it through their eyes. So that's pretty cool.
No, yeah, it's crazy. Dude, I was going to ask you, too, like, throughout, you know, you're checking your inventory, you're fixing, you're trying to make room. From then to now, has your like the collection just kept growing like massively more?
Yeah, I have a pretty big collection, right? But what happens is I have a lot of older friends, or not older, but just friends from a while back that kind of keep in touch, and they'll be like, hey, you know, I'm downsizing my collection, so I have like, you know, 30 kits, or I'm getting out of the hobby, or, you know, just people that are trying to get rid of their collection or downsizing. And so, you know, if it's worth it to me, if they leave a little bit of meat on the bone, then I'll buy the collection. And depending on what comes in, I do two things. If it's resin and I don't have it, I keep it. Even if it's something that I probably won't build, I'm a huge fan of, I'm probably more of a collector of resin than a builder, even though I do try and get through some of those, but I do that. And then the other thing for plastic is I take a look, and if I don't have it, and if it's something that potentially I could build, I keep it. And then if I do have it, I compare the quality of, you know, there's so many, kits that have been repopped or whatnot. So I'll compare the quality of what I have to what I got. And then depending on the work, sometimes I keep the one that needs the most work if I'm up for it, because obviously a newer kit is going to sell easier. But if it's something that, you know, oh, I have a kit that's missing too many pieces, or then I keep the newer one and then I sell the other one as parts. But that's kind of the way that I try to manage my stash. But I will tell you that every so often, I try to keep my office or the hobby room clean, right? I'm kind of a freak like that. But once the boxes start to pile up on the corner, like that's it. I need to reorganize and I need to figure out what do I really need and what can I get rid of, you know? And that's kind of how it works. But has my collection grown over the years? It has, and only because I've gotten more space. When I was in El Paso, I had my stash in my garage. And it was a three-car garage at the time, and so I had a lot of space. When I moved to Phoenix, I had to get rid of a lot of stuff, and it was in storage for a really long time. So when we finally bought this house, I convinced my wife, because of the heat here, I convinced my wife to let me use one of the rooms instead of the garage. And we even thought about building a hobby room in the backyard. But again, it was going to be way too hot, you know, additional AC costs and all that. So
yeah,
I took one of the bedrooms inside the house, and that's it. I've tried to manage, you know, with the size. And so I keep everything in. There's a closet that it's just full from, you know, top to bottom. And then I put shelves around the top of the room. I've kind of posted some pictures here and there in my videos. And so the shelf lets me stack 4 to 5 kits from the shelf to the ceiling, and that goes all the way around the room.
Nice.
So I do have a lot of doubles, and that kind of helps when somebody will ask, you know, do you have this kit? I don't like to usually do parts because I end up with a kit that's missing a part, and then either it's hard for me to build it later or it's hard for me to sell it or whatever. But a lot of times people will ask for a kit, and if I have it and I don't need it, you know, I kind of get rid of it. So That's kind of how I manage it all.
No, it's cool. Yeah, I know once in a while you'll start posting like resin pieces, and I'm always like blown away, like, wow, I've never seen that before. I didn't even know that existed. Like, it's all these like different years and just a lot of rarities.
Yeah.
What I see there.
It is. And you know, what's crazy about it is that, you know, over the years I've collected so many resin pieces, and what some pieces that only used to be available in resin, they kind of started popping up. You know, like a lot of the Fords, I'm a big fan of Fords from the 30s. And so before you'd only be able to get, you know, like the three door or the five window, I'm sorry, the three window or the five window for the Ford. And resin had all these different options and they all look similar, but now like there's more items that are being offered. So, like some of the Impalas, Model House used to do 65 and 66 Impalas, and now you see those kind of all the time, you know? But they're in my collection. They're a little bit different because some of those were just copies from promos before they even made them plastic kits, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's tight. When you get into that mode of like, all right, I'm going to bust out my resins and I want to clean some up, because I know there was a time where you were like cleaning some. What's like your process when you start cleaning your resin?
So the process that's worked for me, right, and I've seen so many different ways that people use to clean them or whatever, but what's worked for me is that I usually, if it has a bumper or a wheel, especially a wheel, if I'm not going to use it, I'll first throw it in bleach white wall cleaner, right, for the tires. And I throw only that piece in there and I leave it in there overnight to make sure that it's not going to affect the body, because there's so many different resins out there. Some of them are so old, some of them are so brittle, that the last thing I want to do is ruin it. I'd rather not build it, not touch it, than it for it to just melt in the bleach white. So I'll do that. And if it's not going to affect it negatively, then I leave it in there soaking for about 24 hours. And when I take it out, I wash it in warm water, and then I use dish soap. Dawn is the one that I prefer, but anything that has degreaser in it usually helps out. And so I'll wash it really good. I leave it soaking also for a few hours in the sink, and then I take it out. I let it air dry, and then I clean it. So I do the cleaning. I start my first time that I'm going to start some of the cleaning. It's not until after I wash it.
Okay, nice. And so
then
that's good.
Then I do the cleaning. Then I do the cleaning, and for some reason it just feels like it, you know, how it gets all powdery. Resin is so crazy. It makes a mess. And I feel like it's less of a mess after I soak it and after I wash it the very first time. It's probably just in my head. But then I do the cleaning. I try to get rid of all the flash, and then I repeat the process again. And then I start with my primer. Then I treat it like plastic.
Yeah, after that, that's tight, man. There was some that I cleaned, and then once I laid some primer on them, since I had maybe like six of them that I was just like in this like cleaning mode, I was like, after that, I was like, all right, let me just put them away because I'm not going to work on them right now. But it just felt good that I got through that cleaning process already and got it to that primer stage and put away. So when that time comes to work on them, it's like I already saved up a lot of that time, and now it's just getting to, you know, what do I want to do with this car once I get that donor on there, and then just go from there. But that's,
oh man, donors, that's another thing, right? You get a resin kit, and then what do you mean it only comes with the body? Yeah, but you can use this donor. That's one of the other reasons that I heard you and Edgar Inglewood talking about resin, and how, you know, he was like, I'll never do resin again. Mm-hmm. But it's tedious. In reality, it is, because a lot of these bodies that are modified and then cast, it's just the body. It doesn't even come with clear parts. So it's it's a bigger commitment to build resin than it is plastic, you know, if you're not used to it. So it's a challenge, man.
Yeah, especially when you primer it, and then you start to see little areas that you might have missed, like around the windows. They can be like a little thickness on one side and it's thin on the other. And now you have to like just clean it up enough so this way that window will fit in there. Flush.
Yeah.
And if not, you might have to just cut up like a piece of clear plastic and create your own window on there.
Yeah. And when there's people that, you know, I'm getting back into modeling or I'm new to modeling, what do you recommend? I always recommend test fitting everything, right? Even on a plastic kit. But with resin, it's that much more because a lot of times when the casters are going to mold the body, they have to thicken up all these areas. And so they don't take into consideration, or most of them don't take into consideration how that affects the window that would be a donor. Mm-hmm. So when you, the builder, is having to prepare it, you have to thin down a lot of those parts around all of the windows. And it's not so much that they're doing it just for extra work, but what they're doing is they're strengthening all these pillars in the body so that when they pull it out of the mold over and over and over, it's not cracking on them or breaking every single time. So it ends up being extra work for us, but it's kind of the process for that casting.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite as far as like a brand, a resin brand that, or a resin caster that's produced resins in the past that you like?
Hands down, Model House to me has been the best caster so far. Mm-hmm. The cleanup is very minimal. It's easy to wash and you know to work with. The donors are usually a shoe-in. It's very little customization that needs to be done. Unfortunately, I'm sure you know they went out of business a couple of years ago, and when their bodies pop up, you're looking at 80, 90, 100. I've seen their kits listed for 250 when you would buy them from them. It was a $70 kit.
Yeah.
So they've gone up in price. Mm-hmm. I have seen people starting to recast them, which I think it's pretty good. If they're doing it right, if they're following a process that provides a decent quality. But I've seen a lot out there that, you know, they make the attempt and it just doesn't come out the way that, you know, some people would like it to be. But you know, other than Model House, you have Jimmy Flintstone. He's one of the first people that comes to mind when you think of resin bodies, because he has so many different ones and they're very economical, but at the same time, and not to you know, take away anything from them, because when they started the Flintstone bodies were still thin, but as time went by, they got a little thicker and thicker. And mm-hmm. so there's extra work involved with fitting in the interior tubs and the chassis and things like that. But on the outside, they are great bodies. Other than those, Star Models make some good bodies. His inventory is kind of decreased over time just because the molds get old, but he offers some really good stuff. I think he still has a website, and if the website's not updated, the email that's there is he still responds to that. So Star Models, if you guys, you know, want to check out his website, there's some cool stuff on there. And then last, RMR, which is Resin Model Ranch, I think is what it is now, Ron Andrews. He has bought a lot of the molds that a lot of these older casters have left behind, whether, you know, they've passed or they've gotten out of the hobby. And he's worked on so many different resin pieces. I have a lot of pieces of his also, and he's helped me to find a lot of my holy grails. And the thing with him is that he'll cast a whole bunch of bodies, and then he'll go to a show, and then he'll come back with maybe 5-6 left from like the 30 or 40 that he takes. They go pretty fast. And I know he tried to open up a website. I think it's resinmodelranch.com, but he had to kind of close it down and put it on hold because he would run out of stock right away, and he was being bombarded with messages about, hey, do you have this? Do you have that? And he has the mold. He just doesn't have the time to cast it because it's just him. So imagine having like 150 different cars that you can cast, but it's just you casting.
That's tough, dude. It
takes a while.
Yeah. And then if you have a day job or, you know, or
yeah, exactly. other priorities. Yeah, I don't even know family. If he's retired yet or not, but yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, and as you know, I'm a lot of the guys know that, and you do also, that resin casting takes time to put out a good product. If not, you know, you're getting, again, something that's going to require a lot of work. You have stuff that has so many pinholes or missing parts or whatever, but mm-hmm. you know, I've gotten to know so many different casters and you know, the work that they've done, that it's allowed me to expand my collection of resin only because of that. And, you know, some people would be like, oh, I don't even know who FNF is, or, you know, Freeman Cars. I can't believe they used to do that back in the day, you know. But there's a lot of guys that are still casting. They just, number one, don't advertise it as much. Or number two, they just haven't expanded big enough, because they usually start to cast for themselves, and then somebody will be like, oh, I'm looking for this kid. And they're like, oh, I can help you out. You know,
mm-hmm.
some people do it as a business, and some people do it just as a hobby. But, I try to not be biased on who I'm buying from. If it's something that I want, you know, I'll reach out to them and be like, hey, I heard that you got this kid. You know, do you have one available, or can you make one, or whatever the case might be? And if it is, then I get it. And eBay, I have a store on eBay. I'm a fan of eBay. I found some incredible things on there, and sometimes I feel like I pay too much, but I never see some of these items ever again, or I've never seen them. So it's always cool to grab some of these and be like, you know, I dropped a good dime on it, but I haven't seen anybody else with this kit, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah. And like, I love eBay too. And you know what? Lately, I've been going on there a lot, but I haven't been buying like model car stuff, per se, like kits or anything like that. I actually have been like finding like old records, old cassettes of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff that I couldn't find and I wasn't even aware of that was released in like early 2000s. And now, I mean, we're reaching 2020, so it's like about 20 years ago. So
yeah.
A lot of people are just like, I don't want this anymore. You know, most cars don't have a CD player no more, so I'm going to get rid of my CDs.
Right.
And I'm like, yes, I'm going to grab the CD, I'm going to import it, convert it into MP3, and I'm set. So,
yeah.
But I'm always looking like for stuff, or I'll put something on my watch list. But some months back, there was some kits that I was looking for, and I was like, oh, yeah, I need this one here or that one there. So it's I don't know. I mean, you know, everybody uses eBay. We've had it for like since it came out, you know, back then.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing. It's fun going in there buying stuff.
It is. And some people knock it because they're like, oh, prices on eBay are, you know, they're overpriced. And I can't believe these people have a kit at $400. And so what I always try to tell people, right, I have almost 14,000 transactions on eBay. And what I try to explain to people is that sometimes these sellers that have these huge stores and huge inventories, it's easier for them to just put a ridiculous price on the item, knowing that it's not going to sell because they're simply out of inventory, right? That's the first thing. And then the other thing is, well, I hope the IRS doesn't come after me or anything for saying this, but there's a tax loophole by doing that for these businesses that creates inventory for them, even though they don't have it, so then they can kind of report it on their taxes later.
Yeah,
right. And to us, it's like, oh, these guys are crazy. I can't believe they're asking $500 for, you know, a 55 Bel Air kit. I can still find that at Hobby Lobby. That's not really why it's happening. Well, most of the time, sometimes there are sellers that are, you know, they're asking for $50 for a $20 kit. But however, the good thing about eBay is that nobody is forcing anybody to buy anything, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anything else. If you go to the store and you're like, oh, that's overpriced, then you look for it somewhere else.
Yep.
You're not willing to buy it, don't buy it. But I don't understand when people are like, ah, I hate eBay. These you know, sellers are trying to steal our money. Well, if it's not worth it to you, simply don't buy it, you know? But the chances are of you not owning this kit because you don't want to pay for that are pretty high. You know, I always hear, oh, it's just plastic. It's $20. You're not going to find a lot of these kits at $20 right now, you know, with the way the prices are.
Yeah.
Once they're gone from Hobby Lobby and Michael's, it's very hard that you're going to be able to use the coupon to get it under $20.
No, definitely. And you know, one of the things I've learned about eBay is you need to just be patient and be monitoring what's going on. So the thing a lot of times is you can tell someone like, oh yeah, I bought this promo and I paid $30 for it or $40 on eBay. And right away, the person's gonna go on their phone. They're gonna look it up, and they're not gonna find it for that price. They're gonna find it. They're gonna find all the high prices, and they're gonna be like, "Hey, what the heck? Like, I'm expecting to get the same price my friend got it for." You know, but if you are patient and you keep checking either every day or every week, somehow something's gonna pop up. Boom, and you're gonna find it. Sometimes it's gonna be even for buy it now. So you better just get on it. But if not, follow it, you know, start watching it or just place your bid or whatever and then go from there, depending on the price that you feel comfortable at. But having that patience, eventually something comes up and you will obtain it.
That's perfect advice. And I kind of tell the guys something similar when they're like, hey, you know, how much is this kid going to cost me if I find it? And I tell them, you know, this is how much it's going for right now. But if you're patient, you know, chances are you can get it for a little bit less, sometimes a lot less. But like many of us, you know, we have more than enough projects to not have to be like, oh, I'm going to pay, you know, five times what it's worth just because I want to have it now. We probably have a lot of other projects that even if we do get it now, we're not going to build it right away. So
yeah,
but patience is a key, man. I agree with you.
No, definitely. And the same time too, is like I had mentioned, I believe in one of the, I don't know which episode, but I know on one of them I had mentioned that like there's like stuff that I'm not into anymore that I used to collect and have that I'm just like, I don't want this. It's just taking up space. So I put it on eBay because honestly, I don't know anybody out here where I live that would want to buy this stuff that I have. But online, mm-hmm. it's like you're offering it to everybody in the United States. So I end up like selling all this stuff and whatever money I make from those sales, I go, hey, well, now the money's in PayPal and now I can place an order online and buy what I really want. Yeah. You know, so it's almost like a trade in a way, you know, you're trading all this stuff for either tools or for some model kits.
It is. And a lot of people on Facebook, especially, they're like, why do you sell on eBay? Why don't you just sell them here on Facebook? To me, it's kind of like a business. It funds my hobby. Like it's gotten so big that I can sell stuff from my collection or from my stash so that I can fund something else that I want to buy. Right. It's been a very long time that I've had to kind of be like, hey, we're not going to go out to eat today because I just bought kids. Like, it's been a very long time that has happened. And, I've worked on that. But your audience kind of, it triples, it quadruples, because I'm not just selling to a group of people on Instagram or on Facebook. I'm selling, like you said, to the United States. Everybody that logs on to Facebook and enters that one keyword, or to eBay and enters that one keyword, it's going to show up in their search results. So it's easier for me to sell it that way. And I try to keep my prices, you know, at market value. And usually it's right at the bottom. Sometimes it's a little bit higher than that, depending on the rarity. But I try to stay competitive. And I tell some of the guys that, you know, they're like, hey, I'm going to sell these kits. What do you think they're worth at? I always tell them, if you want people to buy from you instead of from eBay or Facebook or somebody else, you have to have it slightly lower than what it's worth. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I paid more for it. That's a disadvantage to having to resell your kit sometimes.
Yeah, that is true. That is so true right there. Yeah, it's a trip, but I feel like it's more secure too, selling it on eBay because of the rating system with feedback. Not only that, everything's tracked, everything, you know, so this way it's really legit with both parties. You know, during the transaction, because when it's like online, you know, anywhere else, it's or even like OfferUp and all the other stuff, it's cool, but it's still kind of loose. You don't know. You're taking that risk.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You're taking that risk. And aside from, you know, from doing like the business side to handle, you know, to support like the hobby, when do you find the best time to work on your model cars? Is it at night or during the day?
So I'm very lucky to work from home, right? The job, my day job right now, I work from home. And so in between my meetings or, you know, during my breaks or during my lunch, before work even, I walk over to the hobby room. Right now, my time's being consumed by 3D printing, right? But when that's not going on and I'm working on a car, I'll come over and I'll, you know, glue a couple of pieces, detail a couple of pieces of the engine or whatever. But throughout the day, I kind of make it it's kind of a getaway for me, I guess, from reality, right? To just walk over here and just glue something together or mock something up or kind of decide what I'm going to build next. So I try to do that throughout the day, but most of the time when I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to spend a couple of hours. It'll happen in the evenings after, you know, we've had dinner. I sit down and watch TV with my family for a little while. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to head over to the office for an hour or two. You know, I'll be back. And that's kind of when I do it. I don't do it every day, but I do try to get a little bit of work done in whatever I'm working on. You know, sometimes I may have blacked out a grill or whatever the day before. So now I come over and I have to paint, you know, maybe the quarter lights or whatever, or glue the clear parts onto the grill. Just little by little is how I kind of finish my builds. And sometimes it feels like I build them way too fast. But I think it's because every day I'm doing something, even if it's for a few minutes to that build.
Yeah, I feel like you build at a good pace, and the cool thing is that you get them done, because it's like I see the progression on each build. You're doing boom, boom, you're knocking things out, and you're giving it that attention it needs to each phase to get it to mm-hmm. that completed phase. And I feel I'm guilty of like putting all my energy and time and thought into the beginning process of the development of what I'm going to cut or shape or glue. And once I reach that like primer stage to that final stage where it's getting close to paint, then I either kind of get burned out or I open up another kit. And then, and then next thing you know, I have like kits in the closet that if I open each one up to show you, there's a primered car in there just chilling, waiting in line.
Oh man. Us true builders have at least 5 started builds somewhere. I can tell you in my stash. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I have this kit. And then I pull it out and it started. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was going to build it like this or whatever. But I've tried to do a lot more planning before I start to build. But the same thing that happens to you happens to me. By the time I get, you know, halfway through the build, like it bores me. So sometimes I'm like, all right, I'm going to build this one. And then I just start and I just get going. And that's usually how I can finish a kit, you know, pretty simple. I've gone to the point on some builds where the body's painted, the interior's done, and all I have to do is stick an engine in it. And I can tell you, just looking here at one of my walls, I have at least 3 kits that are pretty close to being finished. They just don't have an engine. Because I get burned out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, dude, one thing that I thought was really awesome is right now you're working on that Mustang that you're doing. And I was looking at one of your photos where you used metallizing powder on the engine.
Yeah.
And it's from C1 models. Mm-hmm. How was that process? Did you like brush it on, or did you have to airbrush it, or how does that work? Because I've never done that.
It's super simple, and I recommend it. I've had it for years. When he first released it a few years ago, I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to get it because it's going to save me so much time compared to using Alkalad. That's, you know, that's a long system. You got to, there's so many steps to it. But anyways, I bought it. And the other day I was looking for a stencil that I wanted to use, and I couldn't find it. And I came across the box and I took it out and I was like, all right, I'm going to give it a shot on the engine. It's a very fine powder. And all you do with like those makeup sponges, the mm-hmm. makeup little sticks applicators, whatever, you brush it on. And depending on what base color you have, it's going to change how metallic it looks or what your final product looks like. So all you got to do is you just brush it on and it starts to turn silver or aluminum or whatever. And it comes with a little instruction card. And I've seen that you can put it like over paint and then you can buff it out to almost a mirror shine. And just depending on what color you have as a base when you apply it, there's so many different results that it can give you.
That's crazy.
But it is extremely simple to use. Mm-hmm. I checked Styrene Addicts. I forgot. Larry was asking me about it, and I checked on Chris's website before I responded to Larry, and he still has it on there. Like, he still sells it. At least his website shows it. But it's extremely simple to use. It gives some really good depth. You saw the engine probably when I first applied it. I loved it. I left it over here in my main bench so that I can continue to use it when I have, like frames or anything on the chassis. Like, it gives it a really good look. I really liked it. You don't have to do anything after.
It looks that way. Cool,
You don't have to seal it or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even like now one of your latest picks with the engine bay, the saline engine, everything and all the wires, everything looks, all the detail, dude, that you've added looks amazing on there.
Thank you. Thank you. I was surprised. I like the way that it was coming up over just the black base. It was just black primer that I put on the engine. And then I started applying some of this to just some sections to change the depth. And I like the way that it looked when I put the engine in the body. Now that I'm at the final stages, I even rubbed it over the chrome. You know how the chrome out of the box is really toy-like? It's really bright.
Yeah.
It dulled it down a little bit, so it looks a little bit more realistic than you know it does right out of the box. So you can apply it on anything. I fell in love with it, and I should have used it a long time ago. But now that I have it here, I'm going to be using it a lot more.
Yeah, that's cool, especially for like the wheels too, when they're like super shiny. Like, and then just add some of that, and it's going to give it that more realistic look on
there. Yeah, that's true. I haven't even tried that.
That's a cool thing, man. I always admire that about you, that you're always getting and trying new things, products, and you just keep pushing yourself, your models to the next and to the next. Has it been like really just like fun and exciting for you, like after build, like the progression from back then to now?
It has. Like, there's been a few times where I felt like I took steps, a few steps back, but just because I lose patience. Like, I can't do patterns for the life of me, right? I see some of you guys do the patterns on the lowrider builds, and I've tried it many times. By accident, I've gotten one or two to look decent, but nothing that I've been like, okay, like, I'm going to take this to the end. They've been all test bodies. So I do try to push myself, but I always risk losing motivation if I fail, right? If it doesn't work out, then I'm like, it's going back in the box. And so I try to avoid that when I really want to get something finished. But I like to try new products. I do like to push myself. I just don't think I have the patience to get to where I'd want to be. Like, I see some of you guys doing, like the Hudson wagon that you did, a beautiful build, right? And pictures, I'm sure it looks even better in person. But like, I'm not at that level yet where I can say, this is a showstopper. I'm not there yet, and I want to get there. I just lose interest fairly quickly, and so I lose motivation, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just rather start a new build. It happens often, unfortunately, but I love to try new products like that. C1 models, a lot of times, I'll buy stuff not just to try it, but also because I like supporting the community, right? If someone puts out a resin transkit, and again, I'm in love with resin, right? So I'm like, I'm gonna buy one of those. Like, it looks like it'd be a cool build. But I do it not just because I want to have it in my collection, but because I want to support the hobby as well. Like 3D printing right now, a lot of people are doing it. It's getting very popular in the last couple of months. The printers have gone on sale, a lot of people are grabbing them. But people like, Daft has been designing for years, and I know Flyboy sells a lot of wheels. There's a lot of wheels that I have that I'll probably never use, but I bought them because I thought they looked cool, and to kind of support the community and just keep that keep those funds kind of moving, right? So if I invest here, I know that he's going to use those funds to make more wheels or to, you know, get bigger in 3D printing or whatever. And it's just kind of a big circle in the community, the way that you invest and who you invest with and what it is that they give in return. And so that's the other reason that sometimes, you know, I'll take something out and people will be like, oh, shit, where'd you get that? And sometimes it's like, dude, it's been years. Like, I don't even remember where I got it from. Mm-hmm. Or if it's something recent, then I'm like, look, this is where I got it from. Like on that Mustang, the tires are Pegasus tires. They're 19s. The wheels I printed myself, there's some that never sold. So I was all like, I'm going to use them. But the Pegasus wheels, you know, they come in all black, right? Those 19s.
Yeah.
I bought some stencils from Zumon that allow you to put the letters for, you know, Pirelli or the Tokyo racing tires. And I used that to add the white lettering for the Mustang. And that's where that came from. And people were like, where'd you get those tires? And I'm like, they're just black tires, dude. I just used this stencil from Zumon. And it's a product that, again, a lot of people don't know it's out there. You know, it's like, I think $9 and you get six or eight different stencils for different tire brands. So it's a small investment, but at the same time, I feel like it's free advertising for a lot of these other companies, because the only way that this hobby is going to keep growing is if we continue to invest in it.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right. Because, yeah, if it's almost like if you open up like a brick and mortar store, and if no one's walking in those doors and coming in and buying stuff from you directly, then obviously you're not going to be able to make any money to pay your rent or anything. Yeah. And then those doors are going to close, and then people are going to be wondering, oh, what happened? Why did he go out of business? You know, and it's like, you have to, if you want to keep it alive.
Like the people. Yeah, it's like the people that did know about it because they discovered it by accident. They're like, oh, I really like that hole-in-the-wall restaurant. They have the best tacos. But sometimes the advertising is just not there, you know? And only the people that find it, use it, or eat there. It's the same thing with the hobby. There's a lot of brands that are out there. They're still kind of small. They put out some great products, but because they didn't do advertising or people were like, oh, it's too expensive, they just went away. A perfect example is... they're still making cars, but again, they don't advertise as much. They're from Hong Kong. Plamoz, P-L-A-M-O-Z, right? They started off making some newer body Mustangs, and it was a transkit that you just had to, you know, get the donor, and it worked really well. Really nice bodies. They also made the 2016 Miata, the MX-5 Club. And I sold a couple of those in my store for a while because they were like, yeah, you know, help us move some of our products. But there wasn't a big demand on the three items that they had. And they were pretty pricey, but they were really good kits. They also had a conversion piece for that Miata where you would turn it into a hardtop. And that's the reason that I found it, because over the years, as my wife has gotten cars and I've gotten cars also, and my daughter or whatever, and I try to find a scale kit of it so I can do a replica. Nothing, you know, we don't own fancy cars, or they're not all fixed up or customized or anything. But my daughter owns a Nissan Q from 2012. I have a model of it that I built. My wife recently bought a Miata, and I was like, I'm going to find a model. I'm going to make you one. And that's how I came across that company. But it's not known a whole lot here in the United States because it's from Hong Kong. They don't advertise out here. So if you find it, great. But if you don't, you'll never hear about their kids.
Yeah. Damn. That's crazy. I didn't even know about them. It's good to know. You know, it's funny, right, as we were talking about like the businesses and like supporting and all that, I was remembering an episode of like The Simpsons when Ned Flanders opened up the Leftorium store. Everything in there was like for left-handed people. And I remember Homer was just like clowning, laughing at him, like why would you even open that, this and that? And like nobody was going in there to buy stuff. So then eventually throughout the episode, like Homer would run into people who were left-handed and they were having problems using right-handed products and they were complaining and he wouldn't say nothing. He would just keep it to himself. He wouldn't tell them, hey, about the store. So then it got to the point where Ned like was going to close the business because nobody was coming in. He was so sad. And then finally Homer rounded up like the whole town and everybody turns out everyone's like left-handed.
To go over
and like buy stuff. And then that's what saved his company. Everybody came back and everybody was there buying stuff. But I remember that from a while back. It was pretty funny, but pretty mean too.
Well, and it's funny, right? When you first saw it, maybe you were like, oh, that's fucking funny. But now you're like, oh, like it makes sense. Right. When you think about it. You're like, it does make sense. And, you know, like a lot of times I'll take out a resin body and I'm like, all right, I'm going to try and build this, right? And I'll post it on Instagram. And then, you know, people are like, where'd you get it? Where'd you get it? And a lot of people probably think that I'm just being an asshole. But for years, I didn't write down where I got the body from or who the caster was. I just started doing that in the last 2 years when we moved to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I started kind of organizing. When I get something, when I know who the caster is, I write it on the box now. So if it's something that I recently purchased and somebody's like, where'd you get it? I'll tell them who the caster is. But I've been collecting for a long time. So I have a lot of bodies that people will be like, where'd you get it? And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. I don't know. And it's not that I don't want to share the details. It's just that I really don't remember where it came from. And a lot of those are, you know, even now I'm like, oh, that was R&R or that was who's the other one that has a. Some really good bodies, man. All American created some really good bodies, right? And he's not doing it anymore. But when you tell them, they're like, I've never heard of that. Well, they're not around anymore. Number one, and number two, if you find one of their kids, grab it. It's gonna cost you a little bit, but you'll never find some of these bodies like them anymore.
Yeah, they're done.
Yeah, that's but crazy. You know, it's again, a lot of it happens. You know. I mean, sometimes people just move on. They get tired of, you know, casting. It turns into, it feels like a job and they're like, I'm getting out because I don't have time to build. But a lot of times they just don't exist anymore.
Yeah, dude. And one thing I wanted to tell you too is like lately, man, like all the stuff you've been posting with the 3D printing products, you've been killing it, dude. I feel like you've been bringing in some stuff that, people can definitely use and have been needing, especially for their dioramas. And it's like, how exciting has this been? Like just starting up this is, to me, I feel like this is like another chapter into, you know, Iceman collections, you know, like,
well, you know, it's thanks for that. I didn't come up with it. Right. It's something that, it's kind of just taken off for me in the last couple of months. But I started asking questions. Jay from Flyboy Customs, his wheels, the one I was telling you about earlier, he's the one that gave me a whole lot of details. And shout out to him for helping me out when I first got my printer, you know, the settings and the challenge that I went through. But initially, I was like, oh, like, I'm going to start printing out wheels and I'm going to start selling wheels like, you know, like he does, you know, and I've always been really good about my quote unquote customer service. Juan was telling me the other day, oh, you always offer good customer service because you ship out right away. So I wanted to print wheels and then I wanted to sell them. Right. And it just wasn't working out. Right. Like wheels weren't selling the way that I thought they were going to, at least when, you know, the first couple of weeks when I started. And so I started looking at what other stuff I could print, what other stuff would I like to see. And at the time I had just finished up a couple of dioramas that I, you know, that I did. And I struggled through some of the pieces and I was like, you know, what I could have used is this, for example. Right. And I'm like, oh, the fire hydrant, that's pretty cool. Oh, you know what, some propane tanks here would have looked really cool. And then it just took off from there. You know, and a lot of people, and I appreciate everybody that reaches out and it's like, hey, have you thought about doing this? And I have a list, Edgar. I can tell you that I probably have about 40 to 50 different things that I that I haven't printed yet that either I would like to, that I thought of, or that people are like, hey, if you would print out some of these, like I would buy them from you. So I add them to the list. But yeah,
that's cool.
What I've been telling people is that, look, you know, I'll take your recommendations, but if it's something that I know you can find somewhere else, I'll tell you where to find it instead of me trying to, you know, create it, sometimes pay a designer for it. And then number two, I don't want to be the competition necessarily to some of these folks that already have these items available. Yeah, I've done some pieces that other folks have, but they're extremely popular, right? Like the steering wheels. Mike at the 3D, I forget his name. I call him 3D Mike, but you know, he was one of the first guys that started selling the 3D printed stuff and amazing stuff, right? Convertible tops, wheels, and he does them in a lot of different scales now, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
And so what my main goal is to kind of, at least what I'm trying to do, is provide pieces that are not easy to find or that are not available anywhere. Like the figures that I'm doing, there's a lot of figures you can buy out there. There's a lot of mechanics. There's a lot of the girls that you can buy. But number one, they're going to cost you $15 to $20 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not necessarily be what you want, right? So what I'm trying to do is keep the prices competitive and offer a big variety of pieces that I would use on my deals, and that hopefully there's other people that would like to use them also. And people are like, oh, you should do this and you should do that. So I have that running list. But to say that, you know, I you know, now that you mentioned it, it is kind of another chapter for Iceman Collections, but I didn't come up with the idea of 3D printing. It's been around for quite a bit. And I think I was motivated by, you know, by seeing Jay and the wheels that he's selling, and by seeing 3D Mike and, you know, all the different pieces that he's created. And there's just a lot of folks. Not everybody is in it to resell what they're printing, right? Some of these folks are, you know, we make some money off of it. Mm-hmm. Some people print just for themselves, which I think is cool also. But these printers that I think a lot of us are using, it's the more common one, I think, in our scale. They've been around for a bit, and just now they're starting to get popular. You know, people are starting to buy them. Showcase Ismael, he was all like, do I get one? I'm looking at them, they're on sale. I was like, dude, get one. And so we've kind of been talking these last couple of weeks, and I think he ordered one. But I think it's a good investment, even if you're just going to print for yourself, because you're going to find wheels, you're going to find accessories, you're going to find different things that you can create, and you might be the only one that has them.
True.
You know?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the whole like 3D printing, like how a lot of people are. And I know I could see that in the future, a lot of people are going to be, since they're going to be more affordable, people are going to figure out like the software and everything, and they're going to start printing stuff up for themselves. But at the mm-hmm. same time, it's like not everybody, like, you know, not everyone's going to be printing like the same exact stuff. So right. Everyone, I feel like in the future, somebody's going to have like a specialty or to go to, you know, on the items that they're printing, you know. But it's cool. I feel like, you know, if anything, it's going to enhance model building even more. It's just going to keep taking it, because just from seeing like a lot of the pieces that you've make for like dioramas, I'm already visualizing in the future, like, let's say you're doing a diorama piece, and you come out to the West Coast and you want to do like a presentation, and you're going to be a vendor at the show. You kind of want to showcase the items that you have made, right? So you can have your model cars, you're showing your work, but then on top of that, you can show your diorama, and then have all, you know, the figures, the fire hydrants, the crates, everything, and other stuff that's going to come about in the future. And it's going to be like, what the heck? Especially like, I've been seeing like a lot of the work that Luke has been doing, painting like some of the pieces that you've created. And I'm like, dang, like imagine displaying stuff like that. And people are like, whoa, like that's for sale. You know, here's the 3D printed one of it. Now you can do your version of it, like your take on it. It's like,
and that's, I was telling them the exact same thing. I was like, dude, so, you know, I was pretty proud of my little mailbox or my little, you know, newspaper stand or whatever. I thought it looked cool. But when you take an item like that, that's been created that not everybody has, and you kind of add your own spin to it, like Luke did, it just becomes something else. I was telling them that, I think the USA Today newspaper dispenser is one of the first ones that he did. And I was like, dude, you could display that by itself in a case and people's jaws would drop because of what you've done to it. But, you know, there's a few that I've sold. There's a few that have already painted them as well. Chris Goodsell, he also bought a few for me. He put his spin on them. They look amazing. So one thing is me being able to offer the product. And I think that's the less important piece of it. But it's what some of these builders do with their skill and how they bring it alive. It's like any plastic kit. We can all get the same 64 Impala, but it's all going to look the same until we each put our spin on it.
Yeah.
So it was awesome to see what Luke did. And I sent him a few additional pieces. I was like, dude, I'm going to hook you up with like a big box of just items for you. I was like, but paint some for me. So that I can use them as displays for, you know, for my store when I advertise them, because things like that, it motivates a lot of people to see what other people have done with them, right? Like when we're going to build a kid, we go on the internet and we're like, how did everybody build this 1950 Chevy pickup in real life? And that's where our motivation comes from. So I'm hoping that a lot of the things that he's painting, and not just for my items, because he scratch builds a lot, but that it motivates other people to be like, hey, I'm going to give that a shot. Can I build it myself? Can I buy the piece? What is it? But again, going back to keeping that community just revolving around motivation and inspiration, I think it's a pretty big deal. But he's done some great stuff with some of the stuff that he's bought for me, though.
Yeah, I'm looking on your Instagram, and you created those. They look like little crowns that go inside the car, like on the dash.
There's like the air fresheners.
Yeah, the gold. Yeah. There's a gold and the chrome. Like, dude, like those are so dope. I you're doing some stuff that I think most people are like, why didn't I think of that? You know?
Yeah. And just to be clear, there's been some really nice stuff that I've been able to print. But I can tell you that there's my first and still what I continue to print now. These files are files that I've gotten from Daft, right? So he's been designing for quite a while. So shout out to him for letting me be able to print out some of the stuff that he's designed or remixed or whatever. But he, you know, I told him, hey, I'm going to print some of this stuff and I'm going to sell it. Do you want me to give you credit? And he was all like, yeah. So on my eBay listings, if it's something that he designed, it's on there designed by Daft. You know, and sometimes there's a little bit of tweaking that needs to be done, but he's put out some pretty cool stuff that's allowed me to offer to everybody also, you know, with a little twist here and a little twist there, but it's pretty cool. And then there's other people like, you know, I work with Daft a little bit. And when I say work, whatever file he makes, I'm like, all right, I'm going to print it. Mm-hmm. I have Casey, Slowly's Models. He's done a couple of designs for me. Some wheels and there was something else that he did, I forgot, but you know, he also allows me to kind of take what he designs for me, and sometimes I remix it, I make changes to it, and then I'm happy with the product that I'm going to offer. You know, there's just so many different things out there, so many designers that I've been lucky to have, you know, they've accepted to work with me and allowed me to change what they create so that I can make it a little bit more of mine, you know, and then out it goes. And so I haven't done a lot of designing from scratch myself. It's been more of, let me take what you've created and let me modify it so that it's kind of something that now I'm comfortable putting out.
No, that's tight. No, definitely. I like that that air cleaner alien travel features, that futuristic piece. Looks pretty cool. Like, I don't know. That's the thing. There's all these little different bits and things that you're creating that can be used.
And it's crazy with some of these pieces, you know, people that have been in the hobby for a while, they'll recognize these pieces. David, Details Junkie, that same design. I think it's called a Revolver. That was a brand, or that was the name of that air cleaner. It's designed after a real air cleaner, right? When David first did it, he did it as a photo etch piece. And I know because I own one of those photo etch pieces, right? That's how it first came into the hobby, which was really cool. And then Daft kind of put it out not too long ago as a hard piece, right? So something that I could print out. And I had forgotten. And then Mr. Ramirez, Chili Willy, he was all like, hey, that looks like one of David's pieces that he did a while back. And I remembered. And so I reached out to David and I was all like, hey, so give me the background on, you know, who designed this. I want to make sure that everybody that was included gets the credit. I'm going to sell it. Are you okay with it? And he was, you know, we talked through it and everything was cool. But that design goes all the way back to something that David created as a flat file for the photo edge pieces that he used to make.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. That's interesting.
It's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks dope. Yeah. I like that it has a story too behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks tight. Yeah. Cause I'm looking for stuff like that, especially if you know, if I'm like doing customization and I want like this like really flat flush look in the engine. This is definitely something I can use. This looks dope.
Yeah, I mean I printed it, so thank you. I printed it, but again, you know, this kind of feels like it was by accident, kind of a collaboration piece that, you know, so few people have had their hand in, and this is where it's at now.
Wow, that's tight. Do you think eventually, like down the road, you know, like you're going to have your inventory of stuff you're producing, but do you think later you'll have this like other section where it's like people coming to you like, hey, can you print me, can you make me plaques for my club, or can you print me, you know, just whatever, but try to make it exclusive, I guess, if it's club related, just to them and that club.
Yeah.
Like in the future.
I've thought about it. Right. So I've had folks reach out to me and be like, hey, can you design this for me? And I know what my capabilities are. So I'll be honest with them. I'll tell them, you know, I don't have the skill to do that. So I have designers that I work with, I was like, but you have to pay for the file, and then I'd be able to print for you.
Yeah.
You know, and most of the time, folks really aren't interested in that process. It takes a little longer. I've helped out a couple of folks that have been like, hey, I'm looking for these wheels, and they're very similar to styles that have been created already, right? Files that I have, whether it be by Daft or Casey or, you know, other files that I have. And if it's something that I can modify, I will. Like Cam Racing is working on and I hope I don't take his thunder away, but he's replicating a wagon. He does a lot of replicas. And he asked me for some wheels. And so I kind of remixed something that I had. And, you know, I printed them a few times until he was happy with how they looked. And I did them for him, right? And so if I have the capability right now, I'll do it. If I don't, I'm pretty honest. Would I like to get to a place where I'd be for hire? Yes. I don't think that that'll happen because I think that that's a separate hobby and I don't want to step away from model building. But I do want to increase my design skill to where I can design, you know, different parts, different wheels, even if it's just something that I like for my personal builds. I'd like to get there. I don't know how long that's going to take, though.
Yeah. No, I think you will. It's just little by little. You're going to get familiar with it, and then bam, you're going to be doing like your own thing, like more and more and more. And it's just, you're going to be like, holy crap, this is kind of taking over. But you'll find that balance.
Yeah.
You'll definitely.
Yeah, like I learned little things here and there. You know, I created those out of my logo. Everybody, you know my logo, my sticker, right? Mm-hmm. Like my collection's in white and a black background. I was able to print that, you know, in 3D, and it looks pretty cool. I mean, I was super excited about it, right? It's my logo, but, you know, little plaques like that are probably things that I can do. Haven't offered it to anybody yet, but I, you know, in the next couple of months, I do want to reach out to a couple of folks and see if I can get, a digital file of their logo and see if it's something that I can kind of create a little plaque for them, mm-hmm. you know, just to kind of show appreciation. But I want to get there. That's kind of the next thing that I want to do. As soon as I can kind of stock up on the inventory of what I offer now, is spend a little bit more time on the computer trying to turn a 2D logo into a 3D like I did mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that looks cool. I'm like checking that out right there. You did like a built by Iceman collection. There's like four different sizes.
Yeah. Those aren't it. Those are plaques that a guy in Poland did for me.
Oh, those are different.
The clear ones are different. Yeah, I did other ones that are solid gray. I a little farther back, a little while ago. Those are different. Those are somebody else did those, and I put his info in case anybody was interested.
Cool. Oh, I see it. Also, I see the other one now. That one's tight. Dang, dude. I'm tripping out just looking at all these things. I love the crates with the spray cans. I was gonna ask you. You think? Or maybe no, I think that's maybe something we could just do on our own. I was gonna say like, because I'm a record collector, and I was just trying to imagine like maybe just I would say print paper like covers of records, and just have them inside the crate. That would be kind of cool as well.
But it's funny because just like in real life, those crates we use them for. I don't know anybody that owns crates that uses them for carry milk, right? Nobody, none of us use them for that. Uh-uh. But it's funny that file is actually something that I found for free online. You know, so for those of you that are interested in printing those on your own, it's a free file. It's available to everybody. You just have to resize it to whatever scale you want. But they've been probably one of my more popular items. They're cool. You know, there's so many different things that you can do with them. Yeah. But there's a couple of people that asked me about, one of them was like, oh, do you think I can do some, you know, records? And I was all like, yeah, just like you said, just print them up on paper, maybe fold them in half and you're good to go. You throw them in there. And then somebody else, that's exactly what they wanted them for. They're like, oh, now I can put my scale record collection in these crates. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then other folks, you know, I know people that put spray cans in there. I have a similar crate that has full of empty or half empty spray cans in my garage. So there's just so many different things, but it was one of the more novelty items that I printed that just became so popular. And I can't wait to start seeing them like on the back of pickup trucks or whatnot. I saw Luke put them in one of his deals. I saw Jake put them in one of his as well. That's I think they're like stacked in front of a 7-Eleven that he bought from Luke. I mean, I'm excited and humbled to see some of these pieces when they're all painted up and, you know, in place in people's deals or in their cars. It's just really cool.
They look tight. One of the your posts, you posted a 50-inch truck LED light bar. And it's like you say here's a prototype. When before I read it, like when I had seen it, for some reason I was thinking it was like a skateboarding rail. Cause I know you have like another figure that has like a skateboard, like the skater guy with the board. Cause I remember when back then with my friends, when we used to skate, we used to like my friend bought like a rail, but we used to like practice on that thing. So I was just imagining that like maybe in a diorama, like in a parking lot or somewhere. Cause I remember we used to lug that thing anywhere to go skate.
Yeah, I've never been into skateboarding, right? But you know, obviously the internet is there, and I thought about printing up those rails where people slide their boards on and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I was I don't know that you know, I could print up a few and see where it goes, but I don't know enough about it to, I guess, you know, to feel comfortable and be like, hey, look what I'm selling now. People would be like, oh, this poser, he doesn't even know what the fuck he's talking about. But, you know, there's some things that it's crossed my mind, and then I've just been hesitant about it because I just don't have the knowledge for it. But those light bars, I forget the guy's name. He was all like, hey, you know, would be cool if you were to do some light bars. And I said, yeah, I'm going to try it. So I printed them out in gray resin, and they look good, right? It has some really thin brackets, and that was one of my bigger challenges is that because it's such a small piece, the brackets weren't printing sturdy enough to hold up the piece, right? So I figured, okay, I can create a stencil out of just styrene sheet and then include them, right? But the other thing that I wanted to do that I'm still working through is my plan was to print them in a kind of a clear color so that whoever would buy them would just have to print like the back of it in black, the housing, and then the front would actually look clear, like if it was a real light, right? But I've encountered some challenges also with that clear resin. I don't know if you saw some bottles that I posted.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They look crystal clear right out of the printer.
They do.
But after they dry and after you cure them, they get really, really dull, really like smoky.
You think maybe if after, well, as they're in that process of drying, if you shot like, or dipped them in something, some type of something that would just seal them up, you think it would save it or nah, or probably not?
It brings it back halfway. So I did a little bit of research and I've seen some people that would just spray it with a high gloss, a high clear gloss, and it brings it back, but it's not completely see-through, but it might be good enough for these light bars because they're going to have a black housing anyways. But it's still something that I'm researching. Again, it's one of those things that I encountered more challenges that I could overcome in a short period of time. So I kind of put it on the back burner. But, you know, from a lot of the research that I've been doing, there's a resin that I can print with. And depending on how you cure it and depending on how you clean it, you can bring it back to almost a crystal clear transparency. So it's something that I want to come back to. And the guy that recommended, I was all like, I'm going to send you some as soon as I get them done. And he keeps asking me about it. He's like, are you getting back to the light bars? And I'm like, I'm going to get there, I promise you, but I just kind of put it back in line. So, you know, those test prints, when I post those, it's one of my first or second attempts to see what it looks like. And it's like when you build a car and you take up a close-up picture of it, and then you post it and you're like, oh, damn it, I see something wrong with it. That's kind of what these posts help me do is I see something that I may need to modify or tweak so that it looks better when the final product comes out.
That's tight, man. And I mean, you're coming out with a lot of stuff. I can't even imagine what you're going to come out with before the end of this year, you know, before it ends.
I hope so, man. Let the universe hear you, because I hope that I can bring out a few other products that I have planned here, and hopefully you guys will like them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully it would be dope if it was possible for you to come out NNL. West, and even bring some products out if you do. And if if you can't make it to that one, try to make it to one of the other shows later on in the year out here.
Yeah, I need to get the details on what shows are coming up next year so I can start making plans, because like I told you last time, my family won't forgive me if I go out to Kelly without them. So it's kind of like planning a mini vacation with them to go out there. But I do want to make the trip here.
Yeah, like you come back and they're like, how was it? You're like, ah, it's all right. But then in your phone, there's all these pigs. Yeah, what's up?
Right? I'm all excited.
It's all fun.
It was boring, guys. I'm glad you guys didn't go with me. but I do. And, you know, this the show for next weekend, Alex and our bootlegger, he's actually taking one of the newer products that I have. I haven't put it out for sale. It won't be available until Saturday, but he's going to display it. With some of his cars, so people get an idea of what the finished product looks like. So shout out to him for reaching out and asking if he could showcase this piece. So I'm pretty excited to see what he does with it and what it looks like on Sunday.
Oh, nice. Hell yes. I didn't know Alex was going to come out. That's dope. So I'll most likely
I didn't know either. See it
there.
Yeah, he was telling me, he was all like, oh, I'm gonna head out. You're not going to. And I was all like, I'm not going to be able to.
Man, he's going to bust that mission. That's tight. Yeah.
He just started talking and he was all like, dude, those new pieces that you have, like, let me showcase them for you. And I was all like, yeah, he's all selling to me. And I was like, no, dude, I'm just going to give you a sample set and do your thing with them. And here's a few details or whatever. So I'm excited to see what he does with it.
Yeah, that's going to be dope. Definitely going to have to take some pictures.
Yeah. And don't expect anything big. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a small piece of what I'm going to offer, but I'm hoping, and he's very excited about it. He says that, you know, people are going to love them and, you know, people are going to want to buy one or two of them. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. He's like, everybody come over here. Stop what you're doing. Check it out.
Yeah.
We'll make a big old scene.
And I, I think, yeah, I don't know if he's gonna do that, but I think if just by looking at his build, you'll be able to see what the piece is. If you've been keeping up with some of, you know, some of my posts, and you might see it later on this week, but it might not be anything brand new to everybody, but you'll be able to identify that it's something new that I'm recently been testing out. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be dope. Man, I look forward. Anybody you want to shout out there?
Again, you know, these guys that have been helping me with the 3D printing, DAS, Slowly's Models, Flyboy Customs, they've been awesome. And just, you know, when I have questions, when I need help with things, sometimes even designs, they've been hooking me up with that. So shout out to them. I always have to give a shout out to the guys at the model car build-off, you know, keeping that monthly contest going. Very cool of them to continue to do that. And then Luke and Alex, Alex is going to do something amazing, I'm sure, with what he's got for me. And Luke, is, as you mentioned earlier, he's just giving so much life to some of these prints that I'm doing. So shout out to him for putting the skill into, you know, to some of these things. And then last but not least, Showcase also, Ismael, he has some files that he let me print out for him, you know, so he could get out to you guys and make them available. So shout out to him as well. But and then shout out to you, Edgar. Just keep doing what you're doing, man. I love to see your posts. I know you're a big supporter of just, you know, so many different things, of builds and hobby suppliers and, you know, just the modeling community. So keep doing that. I think it's what we all need to do.
Thanks, dude. Thank you.
Some of us at a small scale and some of you guys at a bigger scale, you guys have more reach. So keep doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, dude. It was awesome, dude, having you on the show. Great conversations. And I look forward to what you're doing. You know, keep it up. And yeah, don't stop building, dude. I don't think you are going to stop. You're knocking them out. That's tight.
You keep I don't think so. I don't know. I'm going to start putting prices on a lot of my kits so that if anything happens to me, I told my wife, you do not sell it as a collection. I was like, you sell it one by one as long as it takes. I was like, you're going to have a good chunk of money if I'm ever gone sooner than later. So we always laugh about it. No, but thanks for having me on the show, man. I appreciate it. Let me know if you need any pieces for the 62 that you're building, and I'll see what I can do to help you out.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted on that. And cool. I appreciate that. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go, and you have a good night, and we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, man. Thanks, everybody, for supporting. And thanks, Edgar. We'll talk to you.
Yeah. All right, man. Late.
Bye.
Bye.